I get so much excitement when, especially when I was doing programming at the bank and stuff, where I would build something and the person's like, oh my gosh, you just saved me like 3 hours, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. You know? And then it might be like, you know, ongoing, like 3 hours a week or something like that. And that's what really, that is definitely a motivating thing for me.
Hello and welcome to the PyBytes podcast, where we talk about Python, career, and mindset. We're your hosts. I'm Julian Sequeira.
And I am Bob Beldebos. If you're looking to improve your Python, your career, and learn the mindset for success, this is the podcast for you. Let's get started. Welcome back, everybody, to the PyBytes podcast. This is Bob Beldebos, and I'm here with Christopher Bailey. Some of you might know from Real Python.
yeah.
Christopher, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's early morning here for me, so it's always fun spanning these different time zones.
Yeah, you're in Colorado zone, right?
Yep, right in mountain zone there. Yeah,
recording this my afternoon, your morning.
Yeah,
getting off of the coffee or getting on onto the coffee.
I'm just going to be drinking here in the background sometimes. Yeah. So
fueled up, right? Yeah, That's also funny because I was recently on your podcast, and this feels now just like a natural continuation, with the difference that there you interviewed me, and today I'm going to interview you.
So. I haven't done very many of these, so I'm interested to see what kind of reaction I get out there in the community. And I haven't done much video stuff either, so I have an interesting background. I'm thinking
it's kind of funny. People listening are going to think they're listening to a Real Python episode because we are so used to your voice as the host, right?
But now, yeah.
You're going
to stop myself and stop asking you questions. So.
Well, you can if you want, but yeah, right. It's going to be about you. So so maybe you can introduce yourself to our PyBytes audience for the people that don't know you yet. And we also always start with a win of the week.
Cool. Yeah, well, so I'm Christopher Bailey. I go by Chris, and Christopher, I'm not very picky about it. And I've been working for Real Python for about 5 years. I discovered them in my Python journey, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit more. And Dan was looking for people to do video stuff. And I had a background in teaching and a background in making videos and was very interested in doing that for that audience. And then 4 years ago, almost to the month, I started the Real Python podcast. I had asked Dan, why don't we have a podcast? And he didn't have time. And I said, well, I can do it. And I had dabbled in doing a podcast before that. And so he helped with the sort of background and that stuff. And it's been a real journey. And I have used both Real Python and the podcast as a tool for me to continue learning. And that's definitely what my show's about. I really like to ask questions, break down acronyms, and try to provide listeners with actionable stuff they can do. Like, I go out of my way to have lots and lots of links on the show and so forth. Yeah. So if you haven't checked it out, I guess this is my win of the week. I'm recording episode 200. And so that's very exciting for me. Kind of a big milestone. I have a co-host, Christopher Trudeau, and we're going to be recording that Friday, and that'll be coming out next week. But that is kind of big. I also did another recording this week. And of course, being on your show, that's kind of a win of the week for me too, getting out there and being out there in the world. So those are kind of my background.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Wow, 200 episodes. I think we're around 160, but that's a big milestone. Yeah, well, we'll talk about the podcast in a bit. I definitely want to know more about it, the backstory. But maybe we start with, because you're not originally from a programmer, computer science background, you talked about video editing, music, education. So I'm curious to hear how you got into coding then.
Yeah, well, I got a computer very early. I'm of the age when people in the United States could still have a paper route. And so I was always eager to have, you know, money and be able to buy things on my own. I was the 6 of 6 kids, so there wasn't lots of like, showering me with presents and things like that. So if I wanted something, I needed to go out and earn it and buy it and so forth. And that has always been my kind of thing. And I was very much into the idea of getting a ColecoVision. I know that's really dating myself, but that a game console that Coleco put out back in the day, and it was fantastic. And I saved up all this money to buy it. And why am I saying that is because my parents gave me the attachment that went to it. That was what was called the Atom computer, which basically turned it into an Apple II, along with a really awkward daisy wheel printer. I don't know if anybody remembers those, very clacky sounding printer. And it had tape drives. Again, repeating floppy disks on personal computers at home and so forth. It was a interesting computer. I learned how to program on it a little bit, basic, obviously, made my own little Dungeons and Dragon, like sort of character generator sheets. And I made a kind of snake game that was a two player that you could kind of challenge each other. That was a fun thing as it came with these controllers. And so I could kind of interact with that. And it was a time when you would maybe code things out of the back of a magazine or whatever and type it into a machine. In school, I did really well and had a scholarship to go to the Arizona State University. And I was like, well, I'm interested in engineering. And so I took electrical engineering and I hated it. I was not a great school at the time for engineering, in my opinion. This is late 80s. They have turned into quite the world-class institution in that stuff now. But at the time, it was very, very frustrating. And I had discovered music and how much I loved it at the time. I decided to pursue that. I formed a band in the 90s and we toured the US and we were, the band was called Beats the Hell Out of Me. And we were signed to Metal Blade Records, which is like, you know, the only band that we were similar to at the time was, there were bands that were way more metal than us. And we were kind of more like a grunge, like early 90s, heavy rock punk kind of stuff. And so they didn't know what to do with us. And we couldn't really tour with other bands on the label. So it was a very interesting thing. But we did three albums. And then I kind of trying to find work and do other things in my life. I ended up working at a music store. And that kind of led to a gig where somebody was looking for a teacher, somebody who could train people about MIDI and keyboards and digital audio. And so that landed me a job where I worked at a place called the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences. That's in Arizona. And I taught there for 10 years. I taught MIDI, musical instrument digital interface. I taught digital audio. I taught basically computers to people that were interested in, maybe not so interested in computers, but much more interested in touching big consoles and tape machines and things like that. It's a weird time, like the late 90s into the early 2000s is when lots of industries started to have that digital turnover. The print world had already happened, right, with desktop publishing and laser printers and so forth. And so audio was really on the cusp of it. Digi Design at the time, which is now Avid, their Pro Tools software was new-ish. And I remember Apple buying the Logic platform. And so those were things I taught, Logic and Pro Tools and digital audio. We started a program in audio for video games. We taught a platform called Wyze, which you might see in games today. But it was hard. It was 4 hours of teaching in the morning and 4 hours of teaching in the afternoon. And I sort of was burning out on the idea of it. And I picked up sticks, moved to Hawaii with my wife, who grew up there, had her folks there. And I worked for Apple for a while. I was a trainer for them. I was teaching Logic, which made sense because I had been teaching that. And I taught Final Cut because I was really getting into video. And that whole thing turned into, you know, working in the retail stores, which was interesting. I enjoyed more teaching the staff. I would teach people how to repair iPhones and things like that. I did both jobs. They call it a creative job and another job they have where there, which is called the genius, you know, or you're back there repairing things. And that was a very interesting journey, but retail is also very hard. And I was kind of burning out on it. And my wife turned to me and said, why don't you come work at my bank? And I said, okay, what do you think I can do? I think you can do SQL programming because I've been doing it. And I'm like, what do you mean? So on the side, they had hired somebody as a contractor to do SQL programming of all these reports. And the person was very slow. And my wife was able to like figure out on her own how to do these kind of reports by modifying them and so forth. And she wanted to, you know, present me. So I dove in and taught myself SQL. And this is after having, you know, gone through an engineering program where I learned Fortran and I learned C at the time. And computers were really boring at the time. Again, this was before that big changeover where music and video and all this other kind of fun stuff's happening with computers today. And so I was very interested in learning SQL. And so I went on Lynda. I don't know if you remember that platform. It's now, I guess, LinkedIn Learning now. And I learned SQL there. I bought books and basically did the whole sort of teach yourself everything. And they sat me down to basically do a job there. It was a bank. And we were working in the mortgage area, mortgage finances and loans and things. And they were sunsetting an entire platform that they were using in the past, and they were moving to a new one. And they needed that data still accessible, and they needed to be able to pull the same reports they used to be able to pull out of it, but just using raw SQL. And I said, okay, well, you have a schema, right, for like this database and so forth. No. Okay. Can you give me some like example reports that were written? No, that's going to be gone. It's just going to be in these MS SQL databases. And so I basically taught myself SQL from the ground up, and I would mimic existing reports from, you know, past documents and so forth. And I had to teach myself mortgages too, because like I had to learn out what all these different forms and numbers mean and so forth, which was very fascinating. And so it was a really neat way to get back into programming. And
full circle then, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Yeah. And then I really enjoyed it. I loved the idea of putting headphones on and working. It was really, really fun. And I probably my favorite thing to do though was people would come to me and say, I want this. This will make my job easier. And I'm like, let me solve that problem for you. So there were very much one-off kinds of things. It wasn't quite building architecture in a way. So that was different. And then I got into Python kind of through another job change. There was a marketing job that was opening actually at another bank. Banks are not unlike other, you know, sort of industries where lots of people move between different institutions. And in Hawaii, it's very much a small little community. And so I moved to another place and they wanted somebody that knew Python. I'm like, I think I can learn Python. And they were open to the idea of somebody who was, you know, at least capable of learning on the fly what they were doing. And so I looked at real Python. I learned, you know, from Miguel Grinberg's Flask tutorial. I went through that whole thing. And it was a long hiring process. So, and then I actually did like a test to be able to, you know, get the gig. I'm embarrassed at what I, you know, wrote at that time as far as my Python, and I became an automation engineer. I was building tools for this marketing department. And then what's weird is I learned R at the same time, and because there was another department learning that was doing that there, and they needed other tools that would interface between it. So I went back and forth between R and Python quite a bit, but kind of started to fall in love with Python and real Python. And then that's kind of the whole thing with Dan. He was growing real Python, and he sent out like an email looking for somebody or looking for people that could make video content. And I've been dabbling in video and had been a teacher for, you know, a long time. And what a great way to learn, right? And so I jumped at the chance. And so like my first video course was about F strings. Anything that was like kind of a question mark for me, decorators was my second one. I was like, what are these things and how do they work? And so that was really fun to create a video course on that, teach myself that. Type checking, I did a course on lists and tuples. And and so I did like about 10 courses. And then Dan kind of turned to me and said, I really like your work. Would you be interested in reviewing other people's work? And so that's kind of what my role turned into. And then that's kind of what I've been doing, less creating and a lot more making sure the other creators putting out their best video product. So it's just been interesting. Yeah.
That's quite a journey, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It took some time there. Sorry.
No. That's cool. There's a lot of follow-up questions I could ask. Just quickly, the real Python stuff, is that your full-time occupation now? Or are you?
Yeah, I was a contractor. And so I would submit, you know, basically for the hours I spent making videos initially. And then I think it's around the year after I started doing the podcast is when Dan was like, maybe we should, you know, make you a full-time employee. And so, yeah, that's a full-time gig and we're all remote. I mean, it's probably not unlike you guys. Most of the contributors and other team members, there's one other person in the US with me who's a video editor who lives in Vegas, Tappan, and have pretty big presence in Canada. And then another presence in all over Europe. So there's I basically am hired through a remote company, but it's full-time and got benefits, which is really great. I'm very excited. Yeah, and it was a great timing for me because that was 2019. I'd moved away from Hawaii. And again, having a remote job was a thing that allowed me to be able to move very easily.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, again, quite a journey from neck for programming into electro engineering that you didn't like, into music, complete shift. And I think when you said
grunge, I have lots of stories there too. You know,
grunge is that, but... grunge is kind of Nirvana like, right?
Yeah. We would be Soundgarden, Nirvana, you know, bands that kind of Seattle sound. We were that, but imagine the most random bunch of people that you would see at a party and somebody points at like 10 random or 5 random people and says, oh, those guys are in a band. That was us. Yeah. You know,
that sounds like a really fascinating career option.
It was interesting. It's hard though. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you went into teaching and then into programming. And now you're basically back into teaching.
Yeah.
So how do you combine the two? Because now you're more than in charge of video content producing, reviewing.
Yeah.
Maybe less so programming. So how do you stay technical?
That's been kind of a balancing act that I've been trying to figure out right now myself. The podcast is nice because I do get a chance to experiment with lots of different libraries. That's one of the types of shows that we do every other week. I do that show with Christopher Trudeau, and that show is much more what are articles and news items. And so I could kind of pay attention to like what's happening with like certain libraries. And then often we'll pick a project that I'm interested in out of that as like a highlight at the end. And I will do everything I can to set it up and, you know, kind of go through some of the tutorials and experiment. And then, you know, I have other things that I kind of play around with a little bit, but I'm doing less architectural in these things. I'm actually kind of chomping at the bit to do more of that. The other stuff is keeping me very busy.
No, that's great. And that answers a question as well, which I had about the podcast, the format. So it seems like you have interviews, but then also like kind of news.
It's kind of a news thing. Yeah.
But like Python Bytes does, right?
Yeah. We kind of approach it a little bit differently. We'll do like a little sort of newsy segment. Then we'll grab articles specifically. And then when I had started it with David Amos, who was my other sort of co-host at the time, we would then, you know, talk about a project each. And Christopher and I have expanded that to having not only the two articles each, but then a project each. But we'll sometimes then have like a discussion, which sometimes gets pretty more detailed and almost turns into an interview of me of Christopher, because he has way more opinions and has worked in the industry a lot more. He's much more of a web dev kind of guy, APIs, but he also does training and other things like that. He's one of the other video creators on the platform. So yeah, so that's kind of, I guess, the format. And then you're right, every other week is like more of an interview, like the one that we did. I had Wes McKinney on recently, the creator of Pandas, and talk about really what's happening with data science and all the tools there, which has been interesting. So
yeah. Nice, nice. And it seems in your career, you have to, several times you had to learn stuff from scratch, not only Python, but also the SQL job you spoke about. So I want to talk a bit like the mindset about learning and picking skills up fast, as we know is a requirement in this space. And yeah, maybe also how your background in music and teaching has helped you there, if so.
So I've always been fascinated with technology. And I definitely came into the music industry at an interesting time also, like right when I'm getting out of high school and getting more into like a full-time or part-time job kind of thing. This is when 4-track tape recorders were coming around that were kind of a small thing you could set on your desktop. And so I could write and record music by myself and play multiple parts. And so that's why guitar is my main instrument, but I got onto keyboards and would program drum machines. And so I got very good at like interfacing with like technology and learning how to learn what it's trying to tell me from the front panel. And I've always kind of enjoyed that sort of immersive part of it. And I think programming is the same thing for me, like for like learning SQL. I am voracious. If there was a SQL podcast, I didn't know of it at the time. But when I got to Python, I was like immediately was checking out like Talk Python. That's where I heard about Dan at the time. And I guess Python Bytes had started up around that time also, when I was just getting going in the Python world. And I just, anything I can do to kind of immerse myself. And so on that show, very often don't slow down for the beginners. It's very much more of an immersion kind of thing. And at least at the time. And so I would be like, what are they talking about? What are these tools? What are these different technologies they're talking about and acronyms and so forth? And so I'd have to go off and like research those things, but that was kind of fun part of it. Or I would eventually run into it and go, oh, that's what that is. That's what that combination of letters and numbers mean that you're speaking about and how they would, you know, use things. I'm very much that type of person where I dive headfirst into things. And that's kind of, I guess my mindset of it is, I give you an aside, like I got really into video when digital video became a thing and you could get like a digital video camera, even though they were still tape, you could still connect it to like a Mac and do video editing and, you know, and ingest it. So I would do these video challenges where you had a 48-hour time period to write, shoot, edit, and then basically produce this video as a contest. And so they wouldn't let you know, like there'd be like a prop and a line of dialogue and other things like that, where you wouldn't know that until you showed up at this meeting at late, it's usually late on a Friday night. That's usually where the 48 hours would come from. You'd turn it in Sunday night and we'd run off and write stuff and create this whole movie. And what an insane way to learn how to do editing. It's like this massive timeline. So it's kind of like the whole project idea, you know, that a lot of people, I definitely aspire to that. This is different even beyond that, because if your stuff was good and was selected and you finished, they would have a showing at a movie theater. And there'd be, you know, maybe a couple hundred people there, which was really fun. And so I was able to get in a couple contests, won like a comedy award. I learned how to do time lapse, like with figurines, like a Lego kind of thing. And that one did pretty well at one of the contests we did. But that's kind of my approach, is it's like a challenge is very interesting to me. That's why I'm very interested in your guys' platform for that too. Like, I think that's a neat way to approach things.
Yeah, no, I see a lot of similarity to our approach and how we started, because as we were talking on your podcast, we started with co-challenges, right? So the immersive learning and deliberate practice is the way, because you cannot really learn how to program or learn a language by reading a dictionary end to end, right? It's not a sequential thing. Yeah. Best is to just learn it from the inside out. You dive in and do what we call just JIT learning or just in time learning. And you just, you're completely lost, but you just start to, you know, look up things just as you need them. And bit by bit, it starts to all make sense inside out. Right.
Yeah.
And challenges are great for that, because now you have a goal, you have a deadline. There could be some competition with it, and you come out with something to show for, right? Which you're talking about with the movie, and it might be featured or something. Right. So,
This is like at the dawn of YouTube also, which was really kind of interesting. So I put a couple of those up on YouTube back in the day, but you couldn't get any traction off of it. You know, it was more like an interesting thing. So,
because people that get stuck is usually they don't have a goal, or they just sticking to the tutorial, and then it's boring, right? But if you're tasked to solve a specific problem you care about, then it's actually fun. And it seems like that has been your experience as well, then, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely, I want to add one wrinkle to that. If I have this personality type that I want to help other people. There's actually this person who makes this thing about four different sort of personality types. And I fit into what a category they call the obliger. And so if somebody asks me to do
Myers-Briggs?
No, it's different from that. It's actually just, I can't remember all the different terms, but maybe I'll share the link with you. But the obliger is what I am. And if people ask me to do something, I will feel obliged to do it. And the only problem with this personality type is that people can take advantage of it in some ways. But I like to build tools for people. I like to help people. And so that, for me, is more inspiring than maybe doing it for myself. So if I'm part of a team, hence the video, the movie contest thing and so forth, I would feel obliged. We have to finish. We have to turn this in. I invited all these people over and they're helping me. And like, I can't be the one that just says, oh, I didn't have time to finish. Like, I want to make sure that they feel it's done, or this person needs this tool and it's going to make their life better and easier. And so sometimes I feel like making a project for yourself, depending on your personality, may not be enough. If you make a project that you can share with others, that not only show it off to them, but to like, that it's something that they can use, then that even inspires more out of it. I get so much excitement especially when I was doing programming at the bank and stuff, where I would build something and the person's like, oh my gosh, you just saved me like 3 hours, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. You know? And then it might be like, you know, ongoing, like 3 hours a week or something like that. And that's definitely a motivating thing for me.
It adds more skill, right? Because if it's something for you, that can also be satisfactory, but it always will be you, single user, right? But
exactly. Yeah,
I have a similar experience that when I was making tools for the sport organization, and I had this web front end, and all of a sudden I saw the whole team. I literally saw like five monitors, and I saw five instances of my page on their screens, and And they were all saying that they were saving time. So
it's, yeah, it's, that's great.
That's amazing. So if you have that commitment towards others and you're helping them, I think it's double win, right? Like, and you go further and you get more out of yourself. You'll what's the word? Yeah, you will push yourself harder, right? Because you will be more motivated.
I'll push myself way harder for someone else than for myself, which is kind of a weird thing. It's the same thing with like, there's those people that can set like a New Year's resolution. Mm. And I can't. I mean, if I'm doing it with someone else, like if I can find a buddy, you know, or whatever to sort of commit to doing something, that's going to work better for me. And I just know that about myself over time. And I have to watch out also, though, of people taking advantage of that, me feeling obliged to complete things and build things for people. But I know it's a very large number of the population that have this personality. They were raised well, in my opinion, versus people that are like straight up rebels or there's a questioner is another person. They have to ask lots of questions before they'll do anything. So the obliger is one of those that, I don't know, there's a large amount of the population. And I know that that's hard for them. You know, it's hard for people to like just build something for themselves, you know, like cooking food, like same thing. Like I love hosting people and making like a fantastic meal for them. I won't necessarily make a fantastic meal for myself, if that makes sense. So
it's something to balance, but can also be tremendously powerful.
Yeah.
So a bit more about the mindset. What do you do when you get stuck in deep technical challenges? Do you have any tips? Because that's often where people struggle.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that definitely like the walking thing. And luckily the organizations I was at, even though they were in office, I did have kind of a free rein kind of thing. So I would go take a walk and walk around and that definitely helps my brain kind of get past that stuff. I am a teacher and I would like to try the rubber duck thing. I've never done it. The idea of having somebody else to talk to. My video courses, I would spend tons and tons of time to make them perfect, which is not great. And so a perfectionist is sometimes a balancing act and can be part of the block that I think a lot of people have. And so I think talking things through, again, I haven't done it with an inanimate object, but I've thought about that, like teaching with having someone else there. So I'm thinking about doing some video courses that are like that, because I think that helps me get past this own sort of personal block that I have of making the perfect thing and not starting. That's kind of one of those things. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but like that's definitely some techniques I've used.
Oh yeah, perfectionism is a big thing, right?
Yeah.
When I did my first course, I had to edit out all the ums and ahs and stuff. And all of a sudden—
I still do on the podcast.
Right. And actually we got back into that because we have somebody now that edits it. So we're a bit back into that, but when it comes to, sometimes, especially with teaching, right, I like the raw format better. And especially when I'm teaching coding, that people can see the mistakes. Because if you carefully edit all that away, it becomes too polished. And yeah, people, of course, can still learn the concepts as F strings or whatever. But when it really comes to solving a programming problem, they need to see the process. They need to see where you get stuck. Otherwise, it's not going to be very relatable. Right. So
yeah,
it's definitely a balancing act. And
we've had courses where that's gone overboard occasionally where I've had to cut it back and say, yeah, I'm sorry to say this, but you practice a bunch of really fantastic stuff here, but I need you to redo this lesson because it's just hard to follow at some point. And so that can be, you know, kind of a balancing act there. But I am definitely the same person where I would rather hold, not necessarily hold somebody's hand, but like be the coach next to them, walking them through it. There was this whole term and, you know, having the other person drive, that was definitely an Apple thing, you know, and I wanted to kind of feel that way where like I'm teaching this other person to do it. And so we have this format called Code Conversations where we're trying to do more of that. And I haven't done one myself, but we have a really good one about like packaging, like a kind of simplified Python packaging with iProject Haml, which was a really great code conversation. And Gerarna is kind of walking somebody else through the process, which was really kind of neat. And the other person had their hands on the keyboard. So
the student has to drive.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. We had Ian was driving at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's better, because if you just show it, it can be too passive.
Yeah.
Student has to type and make the mistakes, then it's going to stick better, I think. Right.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. What Python or development trends are you passionate about? What things are you planning to learn? What about
the future? So right now, I'm interested in electronics. You can probably see my crazy setup behind me.
Apart from all the instruments, yeah.
It was another sort of pandemic thing, is building electronic projects. I like making guitar pedals, which is kind of a fun thing. You can get them as a kit and solder them and put them all together. I know this sounds weird, but this is one of the things I truly love about my wife. I taught her how to solder, and we would spend like a Saturday sitting there building things together, which is really, really fun. And that's definitely awesome. Kind of a fun bonding thing. And it's cool, again, when you're done, to have something that, you know, you could play with and build and so forth. And so CircuitPython has been one of those things for me. I've had a few different guests on the show to discuss CircuitPython, and it's, gosh, probably over a year now that I haven't had somebody on, but CircuitPython 9 just came out. It has more music stuff in it, MIDI stuff, sound kind of stuff, which is always interesting to me. They always kind of keep simplifying ways of interfacing, and Adafruit is definitely doing a good job sort of sponsoring that to keep going, which I think is fantastic. And that's where I want to spend some time, and might be, I don't know, I'm not going to make any promises, but this is something I'd like to make some content for Real Python for, to talk about, but also just, again, kind of scratching that itch of building something.
Nice. And then the industry trends you're following, or?
I would say doing the show, I'm following what's happening with WASI, Mscripten, Hyodide, the sort of Python in the web on the internet kind of thing. And I've had Brett Cannon on to talk about it, and I tried to pick his brain. He's still working on the target, if you will, for Python to be, you know, like ready to go for it. I'm also very interested in Beware, what they're doing, and excited that they have some financing too as an open source project. And I'm really watching those things. Why? I think it goes back to the idea of building usable tools for other people. And I didn't mention this in my journey, but one of the things I did for a little while when I was in Hawaii, I kind of did a consultancy where I was building tools for small businesses. And my friend had a small business, which was an environmental science company. And Apple had just kind of tied up their connections with a tool called FileMaker Pro, which is kind of a programming environment, kind of a database, kind of everything. But what was fantastic is that you could build something and it would immediately work on the phone or immediately work on an iPad. And these were people that were going out in the field and they were doing science, you know, like sampling water, you know, checking soil and so forth. And they were doing it all on like clipboards, and stuff was getting filthy, and they'd come home and this dirty document on like a scanner and loaded. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like how many transposition errors and how many steps, and talk about saving time. So I built a couple apps for this company that would help them in that process. And it was a neat platform. It was really fun to kind of learn and so forth. And again, that idea of like handing your tool to someone else, and it didn't require hosting, and it didn't require a cloud instance and so forth. It was like something, it wasn't as great because it did run locally on one iPad, but that person could take that one iPad into the field, and then we could download the data as Excel or PDFs or what have you. And I created some other tools like that. So that was, I really, you know, dig that stuff. And so that's kind of like, I'm like, Python, come on. Let's make it more on these hand computers and so forth. And so I've been looking at that stuff a lot.
Yeah. So basically at the core, it comes down to how we can more easily distribute Python and help other people, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I've not listened to that conversation yet. So can you, and you said WASI, can you quickly explain? So that's basically, is that Python in the web, in the browser?
Yeah, so like probably the best example would be, you know, almost 2 years ago now, is Peter Wang doing the keynote PyScript at PyCon. Yeah, and PyScript. Yeah. The idea of, you know, Python running on the web. And it's using all these other tools kind of underneath it, this sort of WebAssembly, which I heard about it like my first year of podcasting, and I was like, what is that? You know, and I had Armin Ronecker on to talk about Flask, and it was like kind of like his journey through that whole project and so forth. And I have this question I love to ask, which is, what are you excited about in the world of Python, like you do, or, you know, in technology? And he's like, I'm just into WebAssembly. And I'm like, oh, what is that? And then I heard two or three other people kind of mention it. And this idea of, you know, just code running in your browser and being able to make applications there. And so WASM is one of the terms for it. WebAssembly, I don't know what all the acronym stands for, but the SI, the WASI one is a systems interface. And it basically starts to be able to connect to the computer, to ports, to interfaces, to things that you would need to be able to do more than just sort of display data or maybe enter in data as text into it. And talking to Brett last year about sort of the state of this stuff, he let me know that there are lots of parts of, you know, industries where this is happening. So, you know how there's like embedded applications on televisions right now, the idea like, oh, you can have Netflix on your TV, you know, just built into your TV somehow, right? Your TV is a computer. And a lot of those are WASI. They're actually these WebAssembly tools that are written in this format that then it runs on this device, which is just, again, fascinating to me. I'm like, okay, let's get Python there. And that's kind of the stuff that's happening in the background. Does that help to explain some of it?
Yeah, that totally does. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's definitely something to look into. And
Yeah.
But again, it comes back to, making it more distributable and easier to access and...
Yeah, Python and in the data science world, the PyScript is definitely that. There's so much stuff that's sort of included there, which is really great. And it's something that I haven't, like, I talked to Peter after the thing, and I'm like, I want to have you come on the show and talk to him, and I've never quite gotten him on the show again. So I think it'd be a good time to do that check-in, like, where are we at? Like, what's going on with it? And so forth. And because I think there's been a lot of development there.
Yeah, I guess if you say 2 years ago, I remember that coming out was a big deal. And I did a quick demo as well using it on our code clinic in PDA.
Yeah, yeah.
But then haven't really looked back. But I remember the excitement around that. And
yeah, definitely.
Cool. Awesome. Well, lastly, we always talk about books. So
Cool.
What are you reading? Or do you have a recommendation?
I have a series of books that I really like. It's from an author. Her name's Martha Wells. She's written like fantasy books and other things like that, but she delved into sci-fi with a series called the Murderbot series. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a really fun series. It's basically following an android that has a lot of personality. You get to hear all the sort of internal voice. I listened to it in an audiobook format. There's a new one that I haven't listened to yet, and it's very snarky. He's always constantly worried about his humans and making sure that they're okay and not doing something stupid and getting themselves into trouble because he's a security combat model, though he keeps trying to not get into those environments. And I guess Apple has decided to make it into a series, which is interesting to me. And so maybe that'll come out soon. But I've enjoyed a lot of the sci-fi that's actually on the Apple TV Plus platform. Silo is a really good one. And I've bought those books. I haven't started to read the Silo books, though. But yeah, I love the Murderbot series. They're just very, very consumable. You can go right through them.
So. Yeah, I think Brian Ockham was talking about that on the
podcast. Oh, cool. I'll have to talk to him about that.
Yeah, okay. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Well, we'll link that. And so that's a good tip. Yeah, I'm reading all over the place, so I don't have a specific recommendation just by keeping the diet varied.
Nice.
Cool.
Actually, yeah. I guess the other one would be Christopher Trudeau has a Django book that I have read, and then I wrote a blurb for it. I don't know if they'll use it or not, but he it's his first book. It's called Django in Action, and it's interesting. It has like an HTMX chapter, which I think is really kind of fun, combining Django with that.
Nice,
Django's one of these tools that I've always looked at as like maybe bridging some of what that FileMaker stuff would be, combining, you know, database and a web interface and so forth. I'm excited for that to come out soon.
Yeah. Is that self-published or Manning?
It's because on Manning.
In action. Sounds like Manning.
It's funny. Yeah. I always think that sounds a little weird, like, you know, that's an Americanized thing, but in action, like doing nothing.
Well, they got their branding right, right? The fact that I associated.
It's still in early access too. I think their Meep program. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. Right. Anything I didn't ask you that you wanted to share or final shout out?
Piece of advice. I'm super excited to keep doing the podcast. Episode 200 is coming out shortly. So this will probably maybe be about the same time. So I'm excited about that. And if people are interested in checking out those kinds of things, and you know, definitely come check us out on Real Python. I'm always trying to figure out how to get more engagement. I'm on Twitter still as DigiGlean, DigiGlean, DigiGlean. And I'm the same on Mastodon, on Fostodon. But yeah, if you type in DigiGlean, you'll find me there. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn or what have you. So feel free. I've been not great about that. I think most people follow the Real Python account and think it's me. Nope. we have another person who's doing most of that work. So
yeah, awesome. Yeah, we'll link all that below. And I think you're also in the PyBytes community, right?
I joined just right after we had our talk. So yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Now you're doing a great job with the podcast. Really, really good stuff. And yeah, I should say always linking all the stuff. So I think that that's important for developers to have all these resources. And
I
listen to a few episodes.
I think people come back to them. You know, I think it's one of those kind of useful things. Yeah. Chapters is another thing I really am a champion of. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it was great talking today. Thanks for joining and sharing. I think people will get a lot out of it. And now we have done it. We have been on each other's podcast.
All right, we did it. So,
all right.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a great day.
All right.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. To hear more from us, go to pybit.com/friends. That is pybit.es/friends. And receive a free gift just for being a friend of the show.
And to join our thriving community of Python programmers, go to pybit.com/community. That's pybit.es/community. We hope to see you there and catch you in the next episode.